The Bell by Iris Murdoch. Dramatized in three parts by Michael Bakewell. Part one.
I'm going back to him.
You what?
I've decided I'm going back to Paul.
Just like that?
I think we can't take any more of it.
We've been having a great time, Dora. What's changed?
Nothing's changed. It's got nothing to do with you.
Oh, thanks.
I left Paul because I couldn't be happy with him, and now I've discovered I can't be happy without him.
Is this all because you've had a letter from him this morning?
Not particularly.
They come every Tuesday. I can't help noticing.
All with the same reproaches, beautifully typed. And the telephone calls, cold and formal, generally to remind me about somebody's birthday. I just can't get away from him. Even when we're making love, I'm always listening for his footsteps on the stairs.
But darling Dora, that's no reason for going back to him. I never understood what you could have seen him for in the first place.
I was just bowled over by him, I suppose. And he was so self-assured, so mature, so different from all the weedy little art students at the Slade. They even called him Sir. I think that's what really got me. Everyone respected him. He knew everything about everything.
Coffee's ready. Want a cup?
Oh, yes, please. Oh, no, he was so passionate and poetic in those days.
Sally always says you married him for his good taste, his money, and his Kensington flat.
That was part of it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Thanks. You're an angel.
So, what went wrong? Did the flat not come up to scratch?
Oh, no. The flat was fabulous. I just hadn't reckoned that I'd had to sit there all day by myself, looking at Paul's collection of medieval ivories, which I wasn't allowed to touch. Waiting for him to come back from a day at the Courthold or the British Museum. I wasn't allowed to go out to work. I wasn't allowed to do anything. He wouldn't even let me do the cooking.
You are the most frightful cook.
How can I ever be anything else when I'm never given a chance? And then you came along, and I could be myself again, drinking and dancing and having fun, until he found out about us and started setting traps for me.
Mm. And you fell into every single one of them. But you still haven't come up with any good reason why you want to go back to him.
I don't want to. I have to. It's as simple as that. I shall write to him tonight. A long, long letter telling him that I'm coming back.
Fremantle 4761.
Can I speak to Mr. Spence?
Speaking.
This is Paul Greenfield. Is my wife there?
Yes, she is. I'll pass you over. It's your husband.
Paul?
I gather from your letter that you've decided to come back to me.
Yes, you see,
As you know, I'm at Amber Court. I shall expect you there on Tuesday.
But how do I get there?
It's quite simple. You will catch the 4:56 train from Paddington to Hereford. It's a stopping train, and you get off at Pendlecote. Do you still have the keys to the flat?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I want you to bring my Italian sun hat and my dark glasses. And this is most important, Dora. My blue notebook, which you will find in the top left-hand drawer of my desk. Mm. Have you got that?
The top left-hand drawer, yes.
Then I shall see you on Tuesday. You'll be just in time for Compton.
I thought he'd come rushing up here to get me. And all he does is tell me which train to catch and bring his sun hat.
And catch a train to where?
Pendlecote. It's somewhere in Gloucestershire.
Oh yes, the Abbey place.
Timber. He's been there for weeks now, studying some old manuscripts. I didn't expect he'd want me to go down there. He's living in some kind of religious community.
Not exactly your style, darling.
I can just remember the Lord's Prayer, if I say it very quickly, and that's about it. Will I be expected to join in, do you think?
Does Paul?
He hasn't said so. I don't even know if he believes in God.
Well, if you hate us all, you can always come away anyway. You're a free agent.
Am I? I've no idea what I am. But I suppose I'd better do as he says. Is that seat in the corner for you?
Yes, it is. Shall I put your luggage on the rack?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Do you want the canvas bag up there, too?
Thank you. You're very kind.
You made it just in time.
Yes, I suppose I did. I should have got my book out of the suitcase, but I can't very well disturb everyone by getting it down again. And in any case, the whiskey bottles are on top of it, and that wouldn't look very good. My skirt's too tight. It's getting very hot in here. God knows what that man opposite must feel like with those heavy country tweeds. Who in hell would dress like that in the middle of August?
What an adventure for you, Toby. Going up to Oxford in the autumn. I bet you're excited.
Oh, yes, I am.
I don't mind telling you, Toby, I envy you. I didn't take that chance myself, and I've regretted it all my life. At your age, all I knew about was sailing boats.
Yes, I'm awfully lucky.
Mm-hmm. And what a splendid subject for your studies. If you're an engineer, you've got an honest trade that will take you anywhere in the world. It's the curse of modern life that people don't have real trades anymore. In the old days, we were all butchers and bakers and candlestick makers, weren't we?
Yes. Yes, of course. Mm.
The poor lamb. He's really quite attractive. I wonder if I could catch his eye. Yes. But he's looking away and he's blushing.
Symbols are important, of course, Toby. Has it ever occurred to you that all symbols have a sacramental aspect? We do not live by bread alone. You remember what I told you about the bell?
Yes, but will it come during my time here?
Indeed it will. It should be with us in a fortnight. We planned a little ceremony, a sort of christening. The bishop has been very kind and has agreed to come over. You'll be one of the exhibits, you know, Toby. The first of the few. Or rather of the many. We hope to have a lot of young people working with us at Imber.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
Imber? I couldn't have misheard him. But that must mean they're members of the community. Do they know about me, I wonder? What has Paul told them about me? We're nearly at Pendlecote, and in a few minutes, there will be Paul waiting for me on the platform. What am I going to say to him? There's a butterfly under the seat opposite. A red admiral, I think. When we get to the station, it'll get crushed under people's feet as they get out. Excuse me, please.
Yes, of course.
I can feel it fluttering against my hand. What can I do with it? If I put it out of the window, it'll get caught in the draft of the train and killed.
Here we are, Toby. Pendlecote. Get the things. There we are. Have you got that?
Yes, sir.
Come along, then.
There's Paul.
Well, Doris, here you are.
Hello, Paul.
Paul! Is this charming young lady your wife? I'm so sorry. We didn't realize. We shared a compartment. I'm afraid we left her quite out of the conversation.
Let me introduce James Taper Pace.
So glad to meet you.
Hello.
And this is Toby Gash. I hope I've got your name right. My wife, Dora.
Pleased to meet you.
Hello, Toby.
Where's your luggage, Dora?
Oh, my God. I must have left it on the train.
Typical. You haven't changed. Was my notebook in it?
Yes, it was. I'm terribly sorry.
You'll get it back. People are honest.
That's not my experience. Why are you holding your hands like that? Are you praying or what?
Oh, I've forgotten all about it.
Oh, a butterfly. You're full of novelties, Dora. Come along. Let's go to the car.
I hope you're not having too bumpy a ride, Mrs. Greenfield. The old Land Rover isn't exactly our most comfortable car.
Oh, no. I'm fine, thanks.
Well, I tried to get the Hillman minxed, but Brother Nicholas still hasn't mended it.
Brother Nicholas?
Nick Thorley. He's supposed to be our engineer, but he doesn't get round to it very often. He's actually
this
rather...
This is the wall of the estate on our right. You'll get a fine view of the house when we turn into the drive. Can you see all right from where you are, Toby?
Very well, thank you.
It looks as if the gates are shut. I left them open, but it appears that someone has obligingly closed them.
There's really no need to hoot, Paul. Toby will get out and open the gates for us, won't you, Toby?
Oh, yes.
After all, this is where you'll be staying, Toby. At the lodge.
Oh, is it? I didn't realize that.
Hardly looks very prepossessing, does it? Not the way to give visitors a first impression of Imber. Litter all over the place. Newspapers and tin cans. I wish Brother Nicholas could be persuaded to make the place look less like a slum.
There we are.
Thank you, Toby.
Shut up, Murphy. Shut up.
There you are, Mrs. Greenfield. That's Timber Court at the end of the avenue. Magnificent, isn't it?
I didn't expect it to be so big. It's like a palace.
Can you see, Toby?
Oh, yes. It's very splendid.
Palladian.
That's where we live. Us, straight ahead, and the nuns over to the left. The drive doesn't go right onto the house, because there's the lake in between. And if you look over there, Toby, you'll just get a glimpse of the abbey wall. The abbey itself is hidden among the trees. You can just see the tower from where we live.
Oh, I didn't realize the abbey would be so close. And there's the lake. Can none swim in it?
You can, if you don't mind the mud. It's not altogether safe, though, because of the weeds. You'd better ask Michael about it before you take a dip. He's the lake expert.
Who's Michael?
Michael Mead. The leader of our little community. Do please slow down over the wooden bridge, Paul.
I am, James. Don't you worry.
You can't see the far end of the lake from here. It's shaped like an L, with a house in the crook of the L.
Are those the stables with the clock tower?
That's right. So I imagine it's a good many years since they last saw a horse. And... over to the right is our market garden. I expect you'll be seeing a lot of that, Toby.
What's that written above the door?
Amor via mia.
Oh.
Love is my way.
Oh.
Well, here we are.
The house was designed by a pupil of Inigo Jones. It was Jones who introduced the Palladian style into England, and Giles Dalby was by way of being something...
Well, bustle along, everyone, if we're going to make Compline. I suppose the newcomers would like to join us.
Oh, yes.
I'm not certain whether I...
This way, Mrs. Greenfield.
I'm so glad you've all arrived in time. Welcome to Imber, Dora and Toby. We're all on Christian name terms here, you know. I've heard so much about you both, I feel I know you quite well already.
This is Mrs. Mark.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you.
Would you like to retire anywhere, Dora?
No, thank you.
Shall we go in, then?
Dominated. Rex Tennessee.
Oh, you're at the back.
Deus Ater Omnipotens. Domine Healing.
He's speaking in Latin. Apart from Mrs. Mark, there's only one other woman. And she's really beautiful.
Agnus Dei.
That person in the front must be one of the nuns.
Quitolis Petanus.
Why does she keep looking at me?
Miserere.
She's going to speak to Mrs. Mark. Ursula says, please, would you mind?
What?
Sister Ursula says, would you mind covering your head? It's customary here. But I haven't got anything.
Mr. Papione must
go. I've only got this. It's not very clean. It will be perfectly adequate, thank you, Dora. I think I'm getting a ladder in my stocking. And my skirt feels tight. I feel hot. And my feet hurt. I've had enough of this. I'm going to get some fresh air.
In Gloria Dei Patris.
There you are, Dora. We've all been wondering where you've got to. Did we scare you away? I hope you didn't get lost in the garden.
No, but I've lost my shoes.
You've lost your shoes?
I went down to the lake. I kicked them off somewhere near the edge of the stone steps, and it started to get dark, and I couldn't find them. And my stockings are all muddy.
We shall organize a search party. Toby and I will go down to the lake with torches.
I'll come too. I can always find the things that Dora loses. It's an instinct.
And in the meantime, I'll take Dora to meet our little group.
What? Like this, in their muddy stockings?
Don't you worry. No one will notice.
There you are, Dora. Not very formidable, are they?
No.
The man with the bald head over in the corner is Peter Tockglass. He's our nature expert. I'll introduce you in a moment. And the man he's talking to is Patchway the gardener.
You must be Dora Greenfield. How do you do?
This is Michael Mead, our leader.
How do you do?
I hope that you'll be happy here, Dora. Although you might find it all rather strange after the big city. You'll have to take us as you find us, I'm afraid.
Yes, I'm sure I will.
And this gentleman in the ginger beard is Mark Strafford.
I am Mr. and Mrs. Mark, if you see what I mean.
Pleased to meet you.
We're glad to have you here, Dora. We could do with another hand in our market garden.
Oh, I'm not sure that I could do it.
The gentleman in the cassock who's just come in is Father Joyce. He's our confessor.
Confessor?
And this is Sister Ursula, the extern sister, who is our liaison officer with the Abbey.
We are very pleased to see you here, Mrs. Greenview. We have remembered you in our prayers.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you.
And now, Dora, you must meet Catherine Forley, our own little saint. I'm sure you will love her as much as we all do.
Hello, Dora. Hello, Catherine.
Would you like a boiled egg or something? We usually have high tea at 6 and just tea and biscuits after Compline.
No, not an egg. Thank you. I had something to eat before I caught the train.
A little milk, then?
Milk? No, thank you. Nothing.
Eureka! We have your shoes, Dora.
It was Toby who found them.
Here you are, Mrs. Greenfield.
Oh, thank you so very much, Toby. I'm really so grateful.
There is more rejoicing over what has been lost and found than what has never gone astray. And now that Dora's shoes have been returned to us, I think we can all go happily to our beds.
That notebook was irreplaceable, Dora. It represents years of work. I was a fool to ask you to bring it.
I'm terribly sorry, Paul, but I'm sure we'll get it back. I'll go down to the station first thing in the morning.
I should have telephoned immediately Compline was over. Only your antics quite put it out of my head.
Why did you have to take your shoes off anyway?
My feet hurt. Paul, please don't be cruel.
Only you would be simple-minded enough after going off and betraying me with that Noel Spence character to pour me and whine, don't be cross.
Oh, Paul,
now just stop it and let me clean my teeth.
What can I say? Anyway, here I am.
Nor do I subscribe to the view expressed by James Taper Pace that the lost sheep is more to be rejoiced over. And if you're expecting me to rejoice, you'll be disappointed. Your escapades have diminished you permanently in my eyes.
I haven't got any pajamas. They were in the suitcase.
You can have one of my shirts. There's one on the chair that needs to be laundered.
Thanks. Did you tell those nuns about me?
Well, I didn't tell the nuns anything. I had to say something about you to the other members of the community. And if it was unflattering, that is hardly my fault.
They'll think that their beastly prayers brought me here.
I respect this place, and I advise you to do the same.
I can't do anything about what it cost.
You can refrain from being frivolous about it. In your case, I won't speak of repentance, since I don't think you're capable of anything so serious.
What's that?
It's the Abbey Bell. You ring it for the various offices.
Offices?
Or prayers, if you prefer. It's ringing now for matins. And if you're awake in the early morning, you'll hear it ringing for lords and prime. They're getting a big bell soon.
Oh, yes. I think I heard them saying something about that on the train.
There's a legend about the Abbey Bell. I found it in one of the old manuscripts I was reading. It should appeal to you.
Tell me about it.
Well, the story runs that in the 14th century, before the dissolution of all the abbeys, there was one of the nuns who had a lover. Not that that was so very unusual, I dare say, at that time. No one knew which of the nuns it was. But the young man was seen climbing the wall once or twice. One night, he slipped and fell and broke his neck. And the wall's still there, incidentally, and it is very high. The abbess called on the guilty nun to confess, but no one came forward. Then the bishop was called in. He was an especially holy man, and he also demanded that the nun should confess. When the guilty nun still didn't come forward, he put a curse on the abbey, and as the old chronicler put it, the great bell flew like a bird out of the tower and fell into the lake. The guilty nun was so overcome by this that she ran out of the abbey gates and drowned herself in the lake.
Oh, the poor thing.
I thought you would identify yourself with her.
She was probably forced to become a nun. People were in those days.
And she broke her vows.
Is it supposed to be a true story?
These old legends usually have some truth behind them. And there are accounts of a famous bell here. But no one knows what happened to it. It had a considerable reputation because of its fine tone, and because it was very good at keeping away plagues and evil spirits. It had some carvings on it, too, scenes of the life of Christ, which is a very unusual feature. It would be an object of very great interest if it ever did turn up.
But what about it flying out of the tower?
Well, I think it's possible that it was thrown into the lake at the time of the dissolution by the nuns themselves to prevent it falling into anyone's hands. Bell metal was very valuable. I believe that someone once had the lake dragged to try and locate it, but nothing was ever found. The bell's name was Gabriel.
Gabriel? How beautiful. But I feel so sorry for that poor nun. Does her ghost haunt the place?
Well, not as far as I know. But there is a story about the bell ringing sometimes at the bottom of the lake. And that if you hear it, it portends a death. And now you've had your fairy story and it's time for bed.
Have you told it to anyone else?
No, I haven't. Oh, yes, I think I told it to Catherine Forley.
The girl Mrs. Mark called our little saint. So, now they're going to get a new bell.
Yes. It may well arrive before we go. My work here should take another fortnight.
That was a horrible story. You like telling me nasty stories. Like that beastly one by Maupassant about the dogs that you once made me read aloud.
Come to bed, Dora.
In a minute.
What are you looking at?
There's somebody down by the lake. It's the boy who was on the train, I think. Toby.
Toby Gash. It's late. Dora! Come to bed.
Will you take the boy down, James?
I'd rather you did. You know what I think of this idea?
I'm sorry, I know I ought to have consulted you about it. But last week was so frantic it went right out of my head. If Toby doesn't like being at the lodge, or if Nick Fawley starts playing up, we can always move him back into the house.
Yes, so why does it have to be Toby? If you just want somebody to keep an eye on Nick, surely one of us could do that.
Then he'd know he was being kept an eye on. If he's on the boy, Nick will feel responsible for him.
You think too well of Nick. That's the trouble.
I don't think well of him at all. And I certainly know him better than you do. I think he's a poor fish. I'm afraid of his melancholy, that's all.
It's not his melancholy that worries me. It's his capacity to make mischief. We should never have taken him in. And I should never have let you talk me around. I know I don't know much about his background, but there's obviously a bad history of some kind there.
Anyway, we've got him. We can't just chuck him out. There's Catherine to consider, after all.
I am well aware of that. I only wish I had your faith in humankind. But I'd rather have kept the boy in the house. We're responsible for him, after all.
He'll take no harm. I like Toby. He's got his head screwed on. That sort of youthful integrity is proof against infection.
Hello.
Oh.
Is it time to go into the lodge?
Yes. Yes, it is, Toby. I'm sorry. I've kept you waiting. We'll go straight away. Have you got your bag?
Yes.
It's pretty heavy. Let me carry it for you.
Oh, it's quite all right, Billy.
I'll leave you to it, then. Good night, Toby.
Good night, James.
Good night, Mr. Payson.
We go over by the ferry. We never use the causeway except for going to the Abbey.
Oh.
Let go of the bag. I'll drop it in the boat. I'll steady it while you get in.
Right. You okay there, Toby?
Fine, thanks.
Right. We'll be off then.
How does the boat get back after somebody's been across?
There's a painter tied to either end of the boat and attached to each shore, so the boat can be pulled back from whichever side you're on.
The water's actually warm.
I hope you won't mind living out of the lodge, Toby. You'll be with us for most of the time. It's just for sleeping.
I don't mind a bit.
I'm sure you'll get on all right with Nick Fawley. You may find he's rather a gloomy character at times. He's not had an easy life. It'll cheer him up to have a little company. Draw him into things a bit.
You said Nick Fawley, you mean he's...
Yes, he's Catherine's twin brother. Didn't James tell you?
No, he didn't.
I'm sorry. You've been very inefficient. That's Nick's dog, Murphy. Murphy's quite a character.
I adore dogs.
Nick used to work in aerodynamics. He knows a lot about engines, and he's our honorary transport officer. You can be his understudy, Toby. Hope you're going to like it here. You'd best go straight in.
Well, well. He isn't a great man himself. Didn't expect you to come in person, Michael. One is not often visited. One is grateful.
Brought young Toby along. Shut up, Murphy! Shut up!
So, you brought young Toby along. That was nice of you.
I do hope you're giving yourself enough to eat, Nick. I wish you'd come up to the house occasionally for a meal.
No, if you're referring to what's on the table, that's not for me. That's Murphy's supper. I was about to give it to him.
Here you go, Murphy.
Mrs. Mark must have had a fit when she saw all this.
She animadverted, as women do, the old newspapers, the decaying food.
She's got Toby's room ready.
She did something upstairs, and I presume that was it. She was there an unconscionable time.
Have a drop of scotch?
No.
Thank you. How about you, Toby?
Not for me, thanks.
Don't, man.
I think I'd better go. I just came to deliver Toby.
Oh. Go then, seeing that Toby is delivered. How is my sainted sister?
She's very well. Very happy.
When I'm told that a person is happy, I know that is not the case. Of really happy people, that is never said. Don't you agree, Toby?
I don't know.
Toby doesn't know.
Well, I hope we'll be seeing more of you up at the house, Nick. I must be getting back now.
So you keep saying.
Look after Toby. Good night, Toby.
Good night, Mr. Mead.
Oh, how pathetic can you get? So I expect you'll be wanting to go to bed, young man. They've no doubt told you you have to get up at some unearthly hour, and it must be tiring at your age to meet so many crazies in one day.
Yes.
I am rather tired. I think I'll go up.
Go up. Up. Up, Murphy! Up! The great thing about a dog is that it can be trained to love you. Pass me the whiskey bottle, will you, Toby? Thanks. Up we go then, Murphy. The bathroom is there. That's my room. And this is your room, Toby.
Oh, it's very nice. Thank you so much. I'll be all right now.
Sure you won't have a drink? A little nightcap of whiskey and water?
Not for me. Thanks, all the same.
Oh, well. I wish I could say that we would teach you to drink deep ere you depart. Spiritual draughts, maybe. I think I'll lend you Murphy for the night. With a bit short of blankets. You'll keep your feet warm in the early morning, having like an extra dog on the bed. Murphy, stay here, okay?
Come on then, Murphy. Good dog. Good dog.
I'll tell you something before I go, Toby. You've been put here to keep an eye on me, to see that I don't get up to any mischief. leave the door open in case Murphy wants to come out during the night. May your dreams be sweet.
Good night, Mr. Foley.
I've just been on to the station. Apparently somebody spotted that suitcase. It'll be back at Pendlefoot this morning.
I'll go over and get it before lunch.
No sign of my son had, though. I suppose somebody took a fancy to it. It was a particular favourite of mine. I bought it in Perugia.
I'm sorry. I'll try and find another one.
Yes, well, I doubt whether they run to that kind of thing in Cirencester. Well, I'm off to the Abbey, then, to get on with my work. Don't forget that Mrs. Mark's coming to collect you at 10 to show you round. She'll probably bring you along to see me.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting, Dora. We're having rather a busy morning. Ready for our little tour?
Quite ready, thank you.
Then we'll be off. Oh.
Is something the matter?
The flowers.
They're lovely, aren't they? I picked them this morning down by the lake.
We never have flowers in the house. We keep everything here as plain as possible, in imitation of the monastic life, you see. We don't normally allow any kind of personal decoration in the rooms.
Oh, dear. I didn't realise that. I'll throw them out.
Oh, no. No, don't do that. Since you have picked them, you'd better keep them. You'll soon get used to our little ways.
Oh, yes, I'm sure I will.
I do so hope you're going to enjoy it here, Dora. Paul has fitted in so well. Now, we'd better be off. I'm going to take you to see the Abbey.
What did you and your husband do before you came here?
Now, you'll think me an awful wet blanket, I'm sure, but we never discuss our past lives here. That's another little religious rule that we try to follow. No gossip.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
But curiosity that is idle soon degenerates into malice. I do hope you understand. Now, mind the steps here. They're rather overgrown.
Is that the Abbey Tower above the trees?
Yes. Very fine example of late Norman work, don't you think?
Is that where the bell was?
Yes, that's right. We'll cross over by the causeway.
What became of the bridge in the middle, where the wooden bridge is?
It was destroyed by order of the nuns themselves at the time of the destruction of the monasteries. They hoped it would keep them safe, but it didn't do them any good. They were turned out and most of the abbey was burnt down. It remained a ruin until the middle of the 19th century, when it was taken over by the Anglican Benedictines and the rebuilding started. There's very little of the old building left now, except for the refectory and the gateway, and of course the tower.
Oh, you can see the water between the slats. It makes me feel funny. Will we be able to go up to the top of the tower?
Oh, but we're not going inside, Dora. This is an enclosed order of nuns. No one goes in or comes out.
You mean they're imprisoned in there?
Not a prison, my dear. The nuns come there of their own free will. The Abbey isn't a prison. On the contrary, it is very hard to get into, and only the very strongest achieve it. Like Mary in the parable, they have chosen the better part.
Do they ever come out?
Oh, no. They take a vow of stability.
What's that?
They remain all their lives in the house where they take their first vows. And when they die, they are buried in the nun's graveyard.
How absolutely appalling.
Quiet now, please. This is the gateway of the old abbey. The door is never opened except for the admission of a postulant.
What's that?
A person who is about to become a nun. It's rather an impressive ceremony and always takes place in the early morning. But the door will be opened when the bell comes. It will be brought across the lake by the causeway and taken through the gateway just as if it were a candidate for holy orders.
So no one ever goes into the abbey at all?
No. Only into the modern building here, which runs along the side of it. Hardly a thing of beauty, I'm afraid. It houses the parlours where the nuns occasionally come to speak to people from the world outside. And at the end, there's a visitor's chapel, where we are privileged to participate in the devotional life of the abbey. We'll go and take a look at one of the parlours. The gauze screen divides us from the nuns' enclosure. To communicate with the abbey, you open the screen like this.
Iron bars. It is just like a prison.
And beyond the iron bars is another screen. The nun opens it and you can talk through the grill. Would you like to talk to one of the nuns, Dora? The abbess is probably too busy, but I'm sure Mother Claire would be very happy to see you.
I don't think I have anything to talk to the nuns about.
Nothing shocks them, you know. You'd be surprised at what they know and how the world goes on. People often come here to make a clean breast of their troubles and get themselves sorted out.
I have no troubles which I care to discuss.
Well, think it over anyway. Perhaps it's the kind of idea that takes getting used to. Now, let's go and pay a little call on your husband. He's working in a parlour down here.
Now, these are the early chronicles of the Abbey, Dora. They are very precious. You're not allowed to take them away.
What's this?
This is the famous Imber Sulphur.
Oh, it's lovely. All those little animals running up the side of the page. And all that gold stuff.
Yes.
How does it stand?
And here's a picture of the Abbey as it was in 1400.
The sky's so blue, and the buildings are so white. It looks more like Italy than England. And there's the old tower!
Shh. No, we must speak quietly when we're here. Here's the bishop, you see, holding a model of the abbey in his hand, and you can get a very good idea of what it looked like from that. You see, this path here...
Mustn't disturb your work any longer, Paul. I must buzz your wife round the market garden before I get back to my own work. But first, I must show her the chapel.
Well, perhaps you can look at some more of the manuscripts tomorrow, Laura.
This is the visitor's chapel. It is the closest that outsiders like ourselves can get to the spiritual life of the abbey.
It's very dark, and there's a terrible smell of incense.
You can see the altar through the bars, but not the main body of the chapel. We can participate in the services without even seeing the nuns, which would, of course, be forbidden.
Is that one of the nuns?
There's always a nun in the chapel. It is a place of continual prayer.
I rather think that I need to get outside.
It is rather overwhelming, isn't it? One just can't help being affected by it.
I felt as if I was suffocating.
We'll take the little path to the left and cut through behind the house to the market garden.
It's terrible to think of those poor women being shut up in there like that.
It is true that the nuns lay upon themselves austerities from which you and I would shrink in terror. But just as we think the sinner better than he is, when we imagine that suffering ennobles him, so we do less than justice to the saint when we think that his sacrifices grieve him in the way that they would grieve us.
I shall be glad when I can put on a pair of sandals. High heels are completely useless in a place like this.
Now, this is where our market garden begins. It's still only quite small, of course, but we're growing potatoes and cabbages and tomatoes and Brussels sprouts. We pack them up in the old stables over there and send them off to Pendlecote and Cirencester. I supervise that part of the work, as well as the indoor things and the catering. We believe that women should stick to their traditional tasks. No point in change for change's sake, is there? You're welcome to join in where and when you choose. I expect you're very handy with a needle.
I'm afraid I've got a bit of a headache.
Oh, you poor thing. I've probably walked you off your feet. We'll just take a quick look at the fruit garden, and you can go back inside and rest while I get on with my work.
These shoes are simply killing me.
There's Catherine over there, picking apricots.
Oh, she must get terribly hot doing that.
Oh, she enjoys it. And she's terribly excited about going in, bless her heart. This is such a thrilling time for her.
Going in?
Oh, didn't anyone tell you? She's going to be a nun. She will enter the abbey next month.
You mean she's going to shut herself up in that terrible place?
Well, we'd better be getting back so that you can have a little rest before you go down to the station. It will be quite a long walk with your suitcase, particularly in those shoes.
This can't be the right path. I'm sure it isn't. But the other one wasn't right either. And whichever way I go, there are nettles and brambles. God, how I hate the country.
Mrs. Greenfield, I saw the colours of your dress through the trees. I couldn't think what it was at first. I thought it might have been one of Peter Topglass's exotic birds.
Mr. Mead, I'm so glad you've come. I think I'm lost.
Well, you certainly won't find your way back to the house by this path. Oh, but it's lovely here. Don't you think?
I suppose so. I don't really know.
You're right. You're looking terribly hot and bothered. Well, why don't you just sit down for a moment?
Yes, I think I'd like to do that.
Now put your head well forward.
Ooh.
That's right. Now you'll feel better in a moment.
I'm all right, really. It's just that I've made such a dreadful mess of things. I went to fetch the suitcase, the one I'd left on the train. I got it, and now I've lost it again. I left it in the White Lion.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to laugh, but you that's so tragic. Oh, it's not as bad as that, surely.
Oh, Paul will be cross at me for days and days. When I got the suitcase, I wanted to change into a summer dress. So I went into the ladies in the pub, and then I had a drink, and all of a sudden it was 2:30, closing time. I hadn't had anything to eat, and they'd run out of sandwiches. And it wasn't until I was on the footpath from the main road that I realized I'd left a suitcase behind.
Cheer up. I have to go back to the village this evening in the Land Rover. I'll pick the suitcase up from the White Lion Den. It'll be quite safe in the meantime.
Are you sure? It's Paul's notebook I'm worried about.
Quite sure. Now, do you feel strong enough for the walk back? It's really not all that far.
So many paths going off in different directions. How do you ever get to know which is which?
Oh, you learn to find your way about very quickly. To this one, it goes round by the side of the pool. It's really quite a pretty walk.
Were you here when it all started, Mr. Mead?
Oh, Michael, please. When all what started?
Oh, you know, the community.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was. The house used to belong to my family, in fact.
You mean you were born at Invercourt?
Good Lord, no. My family couldn't possibly have afforded to keep it up. It was let to a government department for years. It was a long time before I actually set eyes on the place. I felt there was a kind of taboo upon it, I suppose. When I was younger, I intended to become a priest. But, well, that never happened. I worked as a schoolmaster. That came to an end. And then there was talk of the house being acquired by the Abbey, and I came down to take a look at the place. It was then that I met the Abbess. That meeting changed my life.
How do you mean?
Well, I suppose I'd always felt that there was some kind of destiny waiting for me. That was what made not becoming a priest such a disappointment. So when the Abbess put to me the idea of the community, the buffer state between the Abbey and the world, was how she described it, I knew that was what I'd been called to do.
Oh, look.
What's the matter?
On the other side of the pool. It's Toby. He looks rather beautiful.
Yes. He does. He seems to have a touchingly casual disregard for the conventions. But we'd better not embarrass him. Let's allow him to have his swim in peace. Mm-hmm. We can go back by the other path.
Yes, of course. So, did you choose all the others? Or did they just come?
I didn't choose them. Word got round. The Straffords were sent to me by the Abbess. Their marriage was on the verge of breaking up, and she thought the community might provide a solution. And then James came to join us, and then Catherine, and her brother.
I didn't know she had a brother.
Yes, Nick Foley.
Have I met him? Was he there last night?
No, Nick doesn't have much to do with the community. Not if he can help it. He'll be at the lodge.
Oh, the man Paul calls Brother Nicholas.
Yes, I'm afraid he's rather a case and a bit of a loner. If we take this path, they'll take us back to the house in a few minutes.
I hope there'll be something to eat. I'm famished.
The nuns are standing by the side of the lake. They're leaning down to pull something out of the water. It's large and heavy. It's a human body. The body of someone they have killed. They're turning it over. I can see the face. It's Nick Foley. Nick! A dream. Just a bad dream. Why must I forever dream about Nick?
Always on your conscience, aren't I?
I never harmed you.
And it finished you off at the school, didn't it? Oh, I was a beautiful boy in those days.
You came up to my room to ask if you could borrow a book. Shelley's poetry, I think it was.
My first year in the sixth form.
And then you took to dropping in every evening after supper. To talk about books or to read together.
True love in this differs from gold and clay. That to divide is not to take away.
I knew that I was playing with fire. Yet I thought I could escape, unscathed.
And then one evening, I just happened to lay my hand on your knee.
And I knew I was lost. Not that we were ever lovers.
Oh, no.
All we ever did was to hold hands and exchange a few brief caresses.
Nothing more.
Mostly we just talked. About my parents and about your sister. About Catherine. Like Byron and his sister, you said.
My sister. My sweet sister. If a name dearer and purer were, it should be thine.
I just could not believe that there was anything evil about our love. I wanted to hold it up before God, accepting the cost, whatever it might be.
But the price to pay was a little more than you had reckoned.
You betrayed me. And all because some cheap jack evangelist preacher came to the school shouting out tirades about the sins of the flesh. You went to the headmaster and told him the whole story. More than the whole story. Told him of things that never happened.
I told him you had seduced me. It wasn't so far from the truth.
There was no open scandal. I left the school at the end of that term. There was no possibility of my ever being ordained for the church after that. And I began to believe that I was guilty. Guilty of the worst of offenses. Of corrupting the young.
an offense so grievous that Christ himself had said that it were better for a man to have a millstone round his neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. I wanted to make my confession to the abbess when I came here. And then she spoke of the community here as a refuge for those who were disturbed and hunted by God. And then I knew that there was no need for confession. And then Catherine came.
For thee, my own sweet sister, in thy heart I know myself secure.
I thought that she must know about us, but if she did, she gave no sign of it. She looked so like you at times that I felt that I were the victim of some terrible conjuring trick. She never spoke of you, not until after the community had begun to take shape.
I have to talk to you about my brother. He's desperately in need of help. And I believe that Imber might possibly provide that help. He's been leading a pretty dissipated existence. Drink, drugs, anything you care to name. And he just doesn't have the strength or the will to get himself out of it. And now he's continually talking of doing away with himself. But I believe that if he were asked to come to Imber, he would come. Even if he were only to stay for a short time, it might help to mend his health. And who can tell what may be achieved by the power of prayer?
I did not want you here. But could I deny you the chance of salvation? And the abbess favored the plan, so you came. James was horrified.
The chap's a pansy. You can see that, surely. I've seen plenty of that type. There's something destructive in them, a sort of grudge against society. Who'd believe that thing was a twin to dear Catherine?
And now, I try to see as little of you as possible. You've improved a bit, I suppose. You drink a little less. You're a bit healthier than you were when you arrived. But I doubt whether you'll stay after Catherine's received into the Abbey.
Oh, in half an hour, it'll be time for Mass. And today's Saturday. And the weekly meeting has somehow to be got through. What's on the agenda for this morning? Shooting squirrels. Fundraising. And the eternal question of the mechanical cultivator.
It goes flatly against the whole spirit of the community. We have set ourselves apart from the world to follow Adam's trade of digging and delving. We are not a profit-making concern. It is the quality of the work that matters, not the results. There is no place for a mechanical cultivator in our little Eden.
We have discussed this at every meeting for the past 6 weeks. We all know what everyone thinks. I propose that we put it to the vote.
Yes.
Well, very well, then. Those in favor of the cultivator. Peter, Catherine, Patchway, Sister Ursula, and myself. Those again.
No.
James and Mark. How about you, Mr. Mark?
I am abstaining.
Well, I think there's a sufficient majority to act on. May I be empowered to go out and buy the cultivator? And now, for another hardy perennial, the financial appeal. Perhaps you will take this one, Mark.
I hardly think that the subject needs any introduction from me. The point is that we are seriously in need of capital. So far, we've managed to live from hand to mouth pretty well. But I think we've now reached a point where it seems to be perfectly reasonable and proper to make an appeal for funds to a select circle of persons who we know are interested in our work here.
Bill! Exactly, James. It would do no harm if we could synchronize the appeal with the arrival of the new bell and get ourselves a little innocent publicity.
As the subject of the bell seems to have raised itself, perhaps I might have a word. As you know, dear friends, the Abbey has existed without a bell since its second foundation. Now, at last, Deo gratias, it is to have one. The bell is cast and should be delivered in about a couple of weeks from now. I understand, Sister Ursula, that the abbess has expressed a wish that the whole business should be conducted as quietly as possible. Is that right?
I think a little merrymaking might be in order. The bishop is coming, you know, and he won't want too lenten
scene. Does the bishop have anything particular in mind, you happen to know?
Oh, yes. He wishes to revive the ceremony of the blessing of the bell.
Excellent. Well, that could take place with just ourselves present on the evening of his arrival. And then we could have a little procession with some of the village people on the following day. I believe the abbess has the poetic idea that the bell should enter the abbey early in the morning. Is that not so?
Yes, as if it were a postulant.
And since you too are shortly to become a postulant, Catherine, perhaps we could arrange a little role for you at the ceremony?
Oh, no, I wouldn't...
Well, we'd better organise a little subcommittee, and perhaps you should be part of it, Catherine. Could you prepare a report for us on the publicity question, James?
Gladly. A few carefully selected representatives of the proper newspapers, so that we can get a little prestigious but very reputable publicity. I think that the arrival of a new bell will be just the thing to put Imber on the map.